Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Station for sports. 104.5 The Zone.
The Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Wendy's taking the hassle out of family dinners with $1.99 kids meals after 4 p.m. That's right. Kids meals just $1.99 after 4 p.m. at participating Wendy's. Nate Bargatze in studio with us, our plus one co-host today. We mentioned he's decked out in the Vanderbilt gear, as expected when it comes to Nate. What's the first memory of Vanderbilt sports you had?
I don't know. I should have probably thought about it. I just checked out. It's been, you know, I remember going to Vandy, Kentucky basketball. We rushed the court when Vandy beat Kentucky. Remember Vandy beat Tennessee after Tennessee got to number one. They just beat Memphis, and then they came here.
Yep.
They were number one. I don't even know if they were number
2008.
One. 2008. Yeah.
Yep. They were number one for 2 days.
Yeah.
Well, a week until the next poll came out.
I watched Shaq. I remember seeing Shaquille O'Neal play, Chris Jackson, and they played LSU. Vandy football, a lot of Vandy football, some good fun Vandy, like being a real Vandy football fan, Woody Ball, Woody Woodenhofer.
Oh, yeah.
We had the slogan of have fun, expect to win, which is my favorite. Like, it's a slogan that's like, y'all, listening to somebody on the way, and you talk about Jimmy Pruitt, like the way they talked about Tennessee being like, acting like not him now, but whoever, what is
Butch Jones?
Butch, yeah. Like that's the slogan like Vandy had back then, where it was just like, hey, let's just get out there and do whatever, you know,
play hard.
Yeah, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
What was it? Right? Let's try a fake punt from deep in our own territory. Yeah.
That game,
fake extra point.
Who's your favorite player?
Corey Chavis was my favorite.
Where would Cutler be on that list?
He's on that list. Like he's Cutler was unreal. Jordan Rogers, I like Jordan Matthews.
You hung out with him at all? Is he cool?
Cutler? No, I've never met
Were
him.
Were you concerned when he couldn't outrun the police officer when he damaged the payphone or whatever it was? That was a big
payphone violation.
Yeah.
What quarterback could though, Paul?
I don't know.
Baker Mayfield got tackled by a cop in Fayetteville, Arkansas too.
It was just a big running joke in town. I remember that his evasiveness wasn't that good that day, and they were a little worried about him football-wise.
Is this like a family connection where your family's all Vandy fans, so you just
Ronnie Bargatze coached at Vandy in the 70s, and then was the voice of Vanderbilt forever. So we
called games with him at the state tournament.
Ronnie was awesome.
Yeah.
So we did grow up with that. My mom worked in the ticket office for about 10 years. So Vandy's been very involved. We've been around it, you know, there's been a reason. And so we just always been big Vandy fans. And, you know, it was before the Titans, it was before anything. So it was like that's where everything kind of went. And it's fun. I love it. I love being, you know, I don't know. They just mean the most. As far as sports, like so it's like Vandy, Titans. You know, Predators were like teams that are, but then I like the NBA. I don't really have a team and I love the NBA. But it's nice to like watch NBA or baseball and I don't have any like real
you have
hard
no baseball
connection.
Affiliation either.
I was a Braves fan growing up. Dale Murphy followed me on Twitter. That's probably one of the biggest things that's ever happened.
You can retire.
Yeah. I don't even know why. He'd be like a guy I would ask and then he'd be like, yeah, I don't even know how that happened. You're like, all right,
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Forget I mentioned it.
So I follow a lot of Vandy guys, and so I root for them, like, and hope they do well. Dan Zuzon's like the Braves, and but I like being like to have like I don't know. It's fun to have sports, like you know, to be not a real hard fan of any one team, because it's like so you can just kind of sit back and just hope for the best game in any situation.
That's how I am with the NBA. But if I lived around Memphis, I would be at that arena every night that there's a game in town.
There's a weird disconnect with Nashville, Memphis.
Yes.
There's a like the weird.
Tell them why,
like,
Paul.
There's a huge
feud. It's a pit. Yeah. It's a hellhole.
Well, there's a jealousy factor too.
Yeah, they thought they were going to turn into a big time city. They dipped their toe in the water. They were rejected. Nashville took over and boom, they hate us.
When I first moved away from Nashville to start comedy, I would always get asked if I was from, they would say Memphis first. That was always the first city where, as I'm from Tennessee, they're like, oh, Memphis.
It was the largest city for the longest time.
And then but it's completely changed. Now it's Nashville, you know, which is nice.
I'm trying to ask this in a nice way. You grew up in a time where Vanderbilt football was not great.
Yeah.
Did that help shape your sense of humor? Having to sit and watch your team lose that badly for so long?
We had one game against LSU. We had two delay game penalties going for an extra point. And then we got the extra point blocked.
Did they have fun?
Yeah, we had fun. Yeah.
I was in the roll the ball out and hope for the best era.
Oh, LSU was ranked.
It's going to be a huge upset at the time.
Oh, my gosh. That Georgia game, we talked about running the fake punt. That was another one. Like, we ran a fake punt on our side of the field, like on our 17-yard line. And I think we ran it with our punter. I think we hiked it back to him.
Was it Bill Marin Angel?
No, I wish. I remember that was probably one of my first memories, him running that 95 yards.
That's right.
That's like the first one that kind of really hits my, like, I remember watching that.
Fan for life.
Yeah, against Alabama. That's when I thought Vandy was on a SEC losing streak. And it's funny to think, I thought Alabama would be our first win we would beat. Because that's when Alabama, that's just where they were. And then now how they've changed, it's pretty wild. But growing up, I think it is important. I think I want my daughter, like, I think it's nice to be, have a, you know, be a fan. Don't just, you know, I don't know. It's like, I think a lot of kids nowadays, look, I love LeBron James, but I remember LeBron saying his favorite teams were like the Bulls, Yankees, and the Cowboys. You're like, of course they are. Yeah. Like, why, you're not going outside of any box to say that. Like, and I don't like that. I think people should have, a local team. If your local team's great, then great, but stick with them and stick, you know.
Well, I feel like part of it too is the suffering. Yeah. For a fan. I mean, you've done a lot of suffering as a Vanderbilt fan. Most people who are a fan of anything, they've suffered at some point, unless you're LeBron James and all your teams win all the time.
And then you become him. He's also the greatest. So, like, turns out your life is not even suffering, just his teams and then him.
It's ironic that he was a fan of all the teams that won, and now kids who are a fan of him also win all the time.
He represents, like, those. He's as good as those franchises. So, like, that's how good he is.
It's amazing. But the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah.
You know, it was just weird to me that a team in year one is going to win it all. I didn't like that whole concept because I feel like you should have to struggle as an expansion team.
Yeah. I didn't like that. I was happy to that they didn't, but it was, you know, and you were happy for Washington.
Yeah.
Like, seeing them win, like, that was like, you know,
seeing their fans win, you're happy.
Yeah. I think you got to, like, it means more, you know, like when, like seeing, you know, I always think of it like Miami, Marlins, like, when, like, Jeter went down there and they traded everybody.
Yeah.
And, like, they're, like, down there crying. And you're like, and then you're like, they won two World Series. Like, they've been, like, and the Heat and the Dolphins, for its worth, you were the only undefeated team that's ever, like, y'all have had, like, a pretty awesome time, like, being fans. And they're just,
and they're,
like,
not great fans. They don't show up for anything.
No, they're not. And they cry. And they're just so upset, like, Jeter's trying something. And you're like, y'all have not even been around, and you already have two. It's unbelievable.
I got to ask you about these word bubble videos that you put out. I don't know what you call them, but I think they're
great. I don't call them that, but
great. Yeah, that's a bad name. Tell me what I should call them.
I don't know.
I mean, it's like, just
Paul,
like,
stroke continues. You're right now.
Well, I mean, what do you call it? It's a word bubble, and his stuff comes up, like, line by line, and it's really funny, and it's engaging, and it.
Yeah.
I don't flip away from that until the joke's over.
Thank you.
So how'd you come up with that, and is it expensive?
It's expensive. Yeah. Someone does it. That was a good thing. I, like, hired like someone to help, like, that does that. Like, they basically go through, like, all my stuff and, put stuff every day. I approve them. Like, they send me what they were going to put up, and, it's fun to just, like, be like, not approve your own joke. Like, but I would be like, nah, I'm not, don't do this one. And then, because they could really be like, this is your thing, man. Like, we're not making this stuff up. But I heard this from you. Yeah, I just approved two this last week. Like, it's been nice because people have been, you don't know how people are going to take that, if they're going to be like, all right. But people have been nice and shows a bunch of clips, a lot of old clips. And it just keeps, you know, it's just, I don't know, you have constant contact. constant stuff like on your social media stuff. Like Twitter, I don't have that on my phone anymore. Facebook, like,
wow.
I have Instagram like on it. It's a nightmare on there.
How did you cut the cord on that?
I just took it off my phone. I still have it like on my computer, like if I go home. But you get into it for 2 seconds and you know,
and then you spend an hour.
What makes it a nightmare?
Just the opinions of everybody. Everybody's opinions, you know, that
like
they put
reading
out.
Opinions about you when you do you check your app mentions?
No, I have. No, yeah, but that's not good. Usually people are pretty nice. I think I'm at a level that everybody's still kind of nice to me. Like you only get real bad if the Tonight Show puts out a video, like someone with that many followers, then people just trash your like video and just say like it's horrible or. And then I started to have some. You go to Reddit. Reddit is one where they're unleash on you. And just wait.
Reddit can be ugly.
Just wait until you do the correspondence dinner next year. When they bounce back to the nice clean comment.
I mean,
next
yeah.
Year.
I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, that's basically like the internet. They trash Michelle like, but on TV they do the same thing.
Well, if you get back on Twitter, Paul can give you advice on how to set up a burner account where it's not actually you.
Because I've not done it,
and maybe.
But Jimmy Fallon could give you advice.
Maybe Nate can give you advice, Paul. On how to get away with it.
Yeah, I saw that he had. He's supposed. I don't think that. I don't think his. I think he.
Somebody's running it for him.
I bet someone's running it, but I think he was going to maybe write something and then, or maybe respond to someone and then just didn't tag them. Is what it looked like to me. Like it looked like, you know, have you ever done that? Like I've done that where you respond to someone, but you don't tag them and you just put out like a tweet. That's like something. That's what I think he would have done. I don't think he would have a burner account. Like, if someone did without him knowing it and they're doing it, maybe, but, I don't think he's on, you know, I mean, his life's pretty busy and, but I don't know. I could also be defensive and. You know.
Would you roll someone under the bus if someone else was doing that? I would. I'd say, look, I have a lot of staffers. Yeah. Someone else put that. You know, I'm not blaming anyone.
They've
but that's
been
what
fired.
Happened.
Yeah. If you're a comic and you get caught, you're just in trouble. There's no one to blame. But comics would just say, yeah, I did it. I don't understand it. I don't know why you would need to go like defend yourself. You know. But I mean, I don't get the level that they get, you know, they have if you're that big of a spotlight, I mean, there might be a point that you're like, all right, guys, like, and you want to say stuff, you know, and go back after it. So maybe you would have, you know.
Nate Bargatze in studio with us. Have you, you've probably been stuck behind a pedal tavern before, but not on one. Have you been on a pedal tavern?
No, we just try to do one. I just did a tour, with Bert Kreischer. Sal Vulcano from Impractical Jokers
in
Kalkanen. We just got back. We went this past weekend. And we tried to do it in Buffalo. A guy had one. And we're like, what if we ride it to the show? Because we were close. We thought that'd be fun. And so we told the guy. The guy recognized, like, Sal. Everybody recognized Sal from Impractical Jokers. And then we told him to meet us in our hotel. And he just never showed up. He never showed. No, but I think it was like we're asking a guy that just rides this thing, and he's like, I don't. He's like, you know, and we're like, just come here at 7. He's like, yeah, I don't like own this business. Like, he's like a kid, and you know, so what's he going to say to us? You know, and but when we walked outside, and you're just like, he just didn't show up.
Oh, this kid's going to show. Let's go.
Right, yeah,
that's awesome.
So we attempted.
Practical Jokers, by the way, that thing is on loop on Comedy Central.
True TV.
Oh, true. But sorry, true TV, yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's not stop. I was talking to him about, like, they get, when you're with them, it's being out with Tom Cruise. I mean, I've never seen anything, like, people start seeing it. You watch people, like, recognize him at an airport, and you'll be walking, and him and Sal will have, like, his hood up and hat down, and he legitimately has to do that, or it's going to be a mob. And it doesn't even matter. People walk by, they kind of start looking, they all come back over. I think when you're on TV that much and that, you know, people see you constantly, it's like you're very comfortable going up. Seinfeld said it, like, once, like, people go up to him, you know, Seinfeld's an A-list celebrity, like,
oh yeah.
And but people still yell at him like across the street because he's on TV.
Like he's a buddy.
Like Matt Damon, you're gonna be oh my gosh, that's Matt Damon. Right. I can't. I'm so scared. But like Seinfeld, you're like Jerry. Like people just
very approachable.
Yeah. Colin Quinn has his best story he had when he was on SNL. Colin Quinn said his guy, the guy in his building, told him if he wanted to be like the janitor or what's the guy that runs the building, like
The landlord?
The landlord, but the handyman.
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't think of anything. But like
contagious.
The what?
It's contagious. I was having a lot of trouble earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
But they asked him, he's like, oh, does he want to be, he was like, do you want to do that? And he was like, he was on Saturday Night Live. He was like, I'm on television. Like, everywhere. He's like, yeah, no, but like, I mean, you can do a little bit during the week, right? Like, he just like has no concept of like, that he's on TV, like just no respect that he's on it.
Job.
Yeah. Just do it.
There's no bow down factor at all.
No. Have you been with other, obviously like Jerry Seinfeld, but have you been with other people that they have to walk around in complete anonymity to not be bothered? And isn't that weird to be with that person? I would feel like that would be a strange situation.
You just kind of know. You get used to it. I mean, I open for Chris Rock. We'd go eat, and then you could see. You kind of look at people, watch people, like taking pictures. Some do it real far away. You know, some people do it. They don't care, and they just come up. And so it's a matter of how they handle it. You know, like
how would Chris Rock handle it? If someone was taking a picture from across the room, would he like, hey, come take a picture with me, or would he just not acknowledge it?
He wouldn't acknowledge it. Not if it's from across the room. He might notice it, like. But he just wouldn't acknowledge it. I mean, they got to be like focused. It's almost like, you know, like an athlete in a way, like has to be just zoned in on the, like they can't just be wandering around looking because everybody's looking at them. So if they catch an eye with anybody, like it's, you know, that person's probably going to come up and then if you open that door too, there's a weird, like
open invitation,
then yeah, everybody's gonna be like, well, they did it. I should, you know, and some guys are fine, you know, Sal's great about it. Like, but if he can walk through just to get through, he can't go. I was asking him this weekend. I was like, can you go and not do stuff? I mean, he was like, he used to own a bar. I met him before he started comedy. Like, he used to run a bar in Staten Island, and they did a comedy show there. So I met him there. But he loved, like, just sitting at a bar and, like, talking to, like, people. Like, he likes talking to people. And that's, like, that's gone. It's over. Like, he can never go. Because if he walks in, they're going to know who he is. And then it becomes that. So instead of just being able to like hang out, it becomes that.
It's so funny the way that strain between being cordial but not letting that mob scene start. So I watched the James Corden Carpool Karaoke with McCartney. If you guys haven't seen it, it is unbelievable. And so they go to the house he grew up in Liverpool, where he and John wrote the first couple songs and whatnot. And they kind of walked around the house and everything. And he talked about, you know, he had started to write some hits when they lived in that house, and he had to leave in a disguise. You know, he was like, I liked interacting with fans, but getting home, I just wanted to be done for the day or whatever. And Corden pulled the blinds. He's like, I think you might need a disguise today. There were already a mob of people outside, and it looked like it was all the neighbors from his old neighborhood, you know. So he comes out, and he strikes the perfect chord of being, he's like, hey, everybody, thanks for coming. Shakes a guy. We're on the move. You know, shakes a couple hands, but never stops moving. You know, stands on the ledge of the car and gives a big wave so everybody could get a picture.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a thing where he was going to be able to stop and sign an autograph for everybody, whatever.
Isn't that amazing, though, how Paul McCartney, I'm sure, has just mastered that art?
He just knows
like
how to do
being,
it.
Oh, yeah. Always being the nice guy, but also
likeable. Nobody's pissed that he didn't stop, but he was out of there in 5 minutes.
Probably never get stuck in that conversation.
No, I heard George Clooney knew how to, like, he goes up to the person and says, how you doing? I'm George. Like, and meets him. And that makes him step back.
Probably disarms
like,
the person.
Oh. And you're like, oh, hey, man, nice to meet you.
Time.
And then he can move on. Because he's now controlling instead of, like, sitting there and having to, like, listen to
that. It's an alpha move.
I'd like to see that in practice.
Yeah.
That is a great move.
It's an interesting strategy.
I would find it so hard, the Chris Rock story you're talking about. You just have to be focused on the menu and who you're talking to and the food if you're at a restaurant. Because if your eye wanders, someone's going to catch your eye and come and talk
to you. Can't people
it's
watch?
Like bathroom. It's bathroom stall rules at all times. You don't look to your left or your right. You keep eyes straight ahead.
But also, if someone like Chris Rock or yourself, you're constantly making observations about people.
So you're not allowed to look at the stuff that you usually get material from.
Wouldn't it be hard to go and be laser focused and not go to a restaurant in Nashville or wherever you are and look around, and that could spark an idea for a bit?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, Sinbad, I remember the thing that he
Sinbad,
read.
Sinbad, by the way, the worst interview in the show's history.
Terrible. He's eating breakfast.
He was eating breakfast at the airport when he was on was promote something here, and we just ended it about 5 minutes in. But anyways, continue.
It could be the best interview I've ever heard. This guy just eating breakfast. But he said when he first started, he's like, you know, you come up with jokes. Like when he was first starting, he would take a Greyhound bus to like shows. And so you do that to then you go to like limos and first class and all this. So like, yeah, your experience is like, you got to be careful. Cause what are you going to talk about? Like how good it's going. Like, you know, like you have no, like nothing in your life is like scary. Like your bills are paid, like all this usual stuff that you would have goes away. So yeah, I mean, it's a completely different life that they live, you know.
It would be just crazy for me to think about that evolution. Like, how does your comedy change as you become successful, or does it?
Yes, I mean, look at Seinfeld. Seinfeld just did a special on Netflix, and I thought it was unbelievable.
Was that Seinfeld before Jerry, or Jerry before Seinfeld?
Yeah, he did like a lot of old stuff, and I saw him live last year at a festival, and it was great. You know, Chappelle did it. Chappelle does it. You know, I think if you get a lot of opinions about things, like it can change because you're not really talking about your life, so you're not talking about like these stories. But I don't know. It's like I look at like I'm like dumb, and so a lot of my stuff comes from being dumb. So like, no matter how much money I could ever have, you don't become smarter.
Well, I feel like Chris Rock talked a lot about growing up poor. And
yeah.
Now we went and watched Chris Rock when he was here in Nashville. A lot of the comedy is about being rich.
Yeah.
And where he lives now and how different things are. Yeah. So it's just evolved.
He has a great joke about like the, in his neighborhood, like in his house, like it's just like all the black people in his neighborhood are celebrities. And then like the white people are like, just this guy's a dentist. Like that's who's in his neighborhood.
So take us behind the scenes, Nate. Nate Parkatzi in studio with us of The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. Give us the typical day. When do you record that? When do you arrive? What's communication like beforehand?
Well, how you get on it? Like, it's all changed. When you first get on, you do auditions at clubs. Like, so like whoever books it, like, will come to a club and look at like 10 comics, and then you kind of go from there.
Do you kind of know the club that they go to regularly if you're a new
comic? They switch it up. Okay. I mean, they will make it more consistent, like once they go to a place, and like, but they can kind of go wherever or in,
and they're just sitting there all night watching every comic that comes up.
Well, sometimes it'll be like a show. It will be a show designed for, you know, these guys are auditioning for the Tonight Show, and then they go, or Conan or something. I did it.
Time do you get in that audition?
You do like six, maybe at tops, 5 minutes. Cause you only five is, they want you to be, Tonight Show's like 4.5 to 5 is the, at least be a landing. You want to kind of be done in that. I mean, some people go over and it's fine. Sometimes they have to cut it, you know, but you would do that. And the first one I ever did was Conan when he was in New York. I got it. And then, so there they pick you up in a car. That's like, it's always like, I know now, but they say like they're picking a limo, and it's just a town car or something. And you're like, well, you shouldn't be able to call it a limo. Like, and I was in New York where that's just what they say. But in my head here, I'm thinking it's like legit limo.
Stretch.
Like,
you're going to have like mimosas poured for you when you step in.
This is unbelievable. Yeah. It's just like dude's car. But they pick you up that like, or an SUV or whatever. Like, they take you. First one I did with Conan, I remember me and my wife in the car, and people are standing outside 30 Rock with, they want autographs, pictures, all this stuff. And, I see them start coming to the door, and I was like, this isn't good. Cause I'm not famous and they're not. And so they open the door, and I mean, everybody starts surrounding the door, and I walk out, and then they go, it's nobody. And they turn around and just walk away. They were, I walked out apologizing. I said,
who was the marquee guest?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Michael Cera, were I think the first one.
Okay.
They were just hoping. I mean,
guys,
that's my fault. All right. Like, I'm like,
someone actually said, it's nobody, and walked away.
Oh, yeah. I had some guy did a TMZ interview with me once because we were outside a comedy club, and he's like, because they're just do little, because they can, you know, try to get stuff on. And, me and my buddy did it, Sean Patton, like, and, he's like, he leaves, he goes, all right. He goes, I don't know, see what happens. I've got nobodies on before, and leaves. He just says that to our face. And you're like, all right, man. And like, you're like, you could not say, you could just be like, let's see what happens and walk away. You don't have to also insult, like, yeah.
And you're the one, you're interviewing me also.
You're nobody.
I didn't come up to you asking for an interview.
Yeah, well, it never made it.
All right, so you get no greeting as you walk in, and then
you get the greeting. So you go in, someone meets you down there. Now, like, sometimes someone meets you downstairs. You walk up, you go in the dressing room, you go to a little rehearsal. You can either do, I don't like to do my jokes. Some guys will do the jokes. you do like almost the loudest you're going to talk and the lowest you would talk or whatever for the mic, and you know where to stand, and you go back, you just hang out in the back, and then wait till the show starts. It's about an hour of taping of what kind of the show is.
Did Conan come and say hi?
No. Fallon does now. Like Conan, I don't think Conan did. I did four Conans, but like Fallon now, and now that I get to know Fallon, like, so like, like we kind of catch up, and I mean, he'll wonder where I'm, what I'm doing and stuff. And so he'll come back there and we talk, and you know, sometimes you get to talk to the other guests. Sometimes you just see them, you know, I don't know. Some of them I don't know. Some of them are like actors and actresses that are super famous. And like, and then, Vince Vaughn I've talked to, like,
I'll talk to Vince Vaughn too, yeah, backstage. Yeah.
Big hockey guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Patton Oswalt was on one that I did. I can, he's a comic though. So, but yeah, it's, you, do you hang out backstage? They come get you, you walk out, and then you hear them start to announce you. And then, when they announce you, you walk out and you do it.
Do they feed you? What's the green room setup like?
Yeah, they have like, just like kind of the vegetable tray, like, cookies or whatever. But I mean, you can get, if you wanted something, like, I mean, we, like, they would get whatever you wanted. You're typically not going to be eating, like, you know, you have to get there, like, if you're taping at 5, you get, you know, usually kind of get picked up about 3:30, something like that, and then head over there.
So it's a much quicker process than what I expected. I figured you'd have to wait around a while.
You're done by what, 7 o'clock?
Usually it's like 6. So, yeah, no, it's not too bad. I mean, it could be, I would say 3 hours is basically the whole kind of run. I mean, but this is a, you know, it's a show that's been going for 60 years. Like, yeah, it's like they have it like some, I'm trying to think other, some stuff you do have to sit and wait a lot. Like what, it's special, you have to like hang it, like you're there a lot, like a long time.
What did Michael Cera request for his food when he was there?
I don't know. Abe Fagoda was there. Like, he did.
Do you remember
like
any special requests? Julia Louis-Dreyfus have something special?
No, I don't. I wouldn't even get in their room. Like, they're in the hall, like the hallway. You could talk to Val Kilmer.
Did you talk to Val Kilmer, Iceman himself?
He did. He followed me on Twitter and then messaged, then like responded to me on Twitter or something. Like, and then he like tweeted about my album. And I said, thank you. And then he didn't respond back. Then like a few weeks later, he's like, he responded back. He's like, I didn't realize this was you. That was great, man. And then like, he's not putting it together. He's kind of out there. I was in the bathroom with him and he walked in his stall, walked out of his stall, then maybe walked somewhere else. I don't know. I kind of left because you're like, I don't know. You know, I can't be in here if something goes down.
Something else is happening.
Yeah, something really goes down. I don't want to, yeah. But there, you would see him. He went to, he said something. He asked Julie, he was getting married. He might have went. Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on that show too. I've been on two with her. And,
popular pairing.
Yeah. She would never know, but I know. But then he asked her to her wedding or something. Like he just went there, was like, you want to come to my wedding? And she's like, all right. He's like, all right. And left. And that was all they talked to. That's what someone told me. Like, he's his own person. He's a fun guy.
Did you ever speak to Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
No.
On either of these shows?
No, I never. I wish I would have the first one would have been probably easier. Like that was, you know, not too much after. That was 2006 maybe or 7, something like that. So it wasn't like Veep or anything. Like, but, you know, I would have had a specific set. I had these old managers that were really kind of crazy. But they were guys, they would eat everything in the green room. I mean, they would go in and like Conan, they'd come back there and Conan, they'd be like, do y'all need a, you want like a shirt or something? And you'd be like, I'm all right. And they'd be like, no, let's bring a few shirts. That, like, we'll take something. Like, they would take everything that they would give them. And they just all walk out with all their swag.
So are you a straight Fallon guy? Like, there's no way you would do any competing show against him?
No, not stand up on it. Like, not now. Like, it's,
is that just a personal thing or is that like a contractual thing with their show?
No, it's, it's not contractual, but it's, I think, an understood thing. It's, you know,
well,
that's,
Colbert called or he wouldn't call?
I know they did. Some of them have asked, but I don't think they would ask now. I think now they know. But
you just
when
turn
I
them
first
down,
did
let me
it,
ask.
Yeah, we would just say no. But they, when I first was kind of doing him, I did something with Late Night Found. And then when he was still on Late Night Found, I did two, maybe three in a row. I've done a lot, I've done the most. And then they, someone did ask, Corden maybe, or someone, you know, I'm clean. So like I can get asked to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then, we found, you know, we like kind of checked to see, and it was kind of like, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like, you do whatever you want. Like, they're not telling you no, but it's
you could tell you would do them a favor if you didn't do the show.
Yeah, Ray Romano.
They would prefer you not to go on the other shows.
Yeah, yeah.
What Ray Romano said?
Ray Romano did Letterman. Letterman, you know, is produced Everybody Loves Raymond. And Ray Romano wanted to do like another one later, like after the show's gone and stuff. And they, so he asked like his producer, and he was telling me about it. And he was like, look, you can do whatever you want. But he's like, I can tell you that it'll break his heart if you do it. And like, and it's like, it's almost like that's the way to like look at it. Like where
that
it's like,
you're emotional.
You're just kind of like, look, they gave you a show. They gave you like everything. This dude backed you like, you know, Ray Romano's doing it in no ill will. He's friends with Leno. So like, or like doing this tonight. So it's like, are going on Fallon or now he could do whatever he wants. But, it's, you know, so I look at it a lot like that. And I like that. Like that's, I like the idea that you're a Tonight Show guy or were whatever you were. So I love the idea of just sticking to this one to be like, yeah, Fallon's been unbelievable to me. I will always just be a Tonight Show guy.
I have so many more questions about some of this when we come back, but biggest takeaway from that segment, Nate Bargatze said yes to us and no to James Corden.
Yeah. I think there might have been a bit of hatred for James Corden. Yeah. That's what I heard.
That's a huge moment for this
show.
He's
fun.
Nate Bargatze, thank you for... Man, you are a funny, funny dude, man. Oh, my gosh. Thanks. The family, everyone's doing well?
Everybody's good?
Yeah, yeah. I'm good. And you're in Nashville?
I'm in Nashville. I'm a huge Vanderbilt fan, Vanderbilt University. I did not go there. They asked me to say that. And
you actually did not go there, no.
No, I could never get into Vanderbilt or just any college that accepts people. So
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Nate Bargatze in studio with us. You like hearing yourself?
It's fine. I don't care.
Is it awkward?
But I don't love it. Like, you know, it's just like you don't want to look at, you know, I don't want to make y'all feel like you have to laugh, you know, and you guys
did.
It,
so. That was good.
We did.
You guys, those are fake laughs. You guys
we heard some good lines.
They told me how to do that story. I found out right before we taped that I had to do that, that I was going to talk on the couch. That was the first time I talked on the couch.
So they don't give you the questions beforehand for that?
No. I mean, this question was like, where are you from? You know, it was like a very broad, like, because I was going to have to go into a bit, but they told me, that night, the little process part, the night before you go to a couple clubs and run your set. So just to time it out with the guy that books it. And so, and I know him and like, so then he's like, hey, they just like text me and said they're probably going to have time. Like, so like, you want to tell another story? And I'm like, okay, you know, and you're kind of like having to like, you're like, I have nothing else timed out. Yeah, I mean, I've done it long enough, I can kind of guess, but I knew we would have, I thought we'd have 3 minutes, and I was going to tell, so I was like, I'll tell this story, it's about Vandy, it's like, it's fun, like, I talked to Chris Rock, I texted him to tell him I was doing panel, and I've never done it to like ask him, and I talked to him about it, because he had a great panel with Letterman, after Letterman got in trouble with the women, Chris Rock was there. Came on and then just talked about that. And I think helped Letterman like not get like in big trouble. He walked out like, I ain't never even seen any women here. Like, where are these women at? And like, just kind of got out. That's and like, great. it was perfect the way it was handled. And so then I like, first Chris Rock's like, he's like, just do that. He's like, so just come up with that. I'm like, dude, I was like, there's a big difference between you doing it and like me. And so I knew I was going to have to do this, that I just told that Vanny story. And I thought it was going to be 3 minutes. And then right before we go out there, like it's right after I do my set, I sit down, they go, it's a minute and a half. So then I'm like, all right. Like, and then I have to tell Fonz, like, just ask me real fast. And so I'm telling it. I mean, I am
motoring.
I am going. <I'm> like, cause you're just like, you know, you're trying to just get through it and like try to hit what you can hit and then get out.
Have you seen the Gary Shandling documentary?
I've not.
The Judd Apatow one? Well, what jumps out to me is just how The Tonight Show was it for stand-up comics for years and years. Like, his whole thing was, I'm going to become a comic. He moved out to L.A. I'm going to get on The Tonight Show. And then once he was great on The Tonight Show, he was a guest host. And then his whole thing was, I'm going to host The Tonight Show. Yeah. And it came down to him and Jay Leno.
Yeah.
And, of course, we know how that all ended. And he sort of took his name out of the running. I think that Johnny Carson may have preferred him, but he took his name
Letterman?
Out. Yeah. It was Letterman, yeah. Leno, and Gary Shandling.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big part of it, who could have been the host of Tonight Show. But is that still the thing for stand-up comics?
To host?
To be on Tonight Show, in terms of being on a show, or is it getting your own special? How would you rank those?
Nowadays, a special probably ranks more, because a special is like a sign of, like, it's more of what you're going for. But your late night shows are a big deal. They are very, like, that is a very big to do. And the Tonight Show, you know, it's, I mean, I love being able to say the Tonight Show. The Tonight Show's been around the longest, that, you know, it's a staple.
And that was the standard bearer for comics. Everyone
and that
coming
was
up with
so,
that.
Being a regular, like, there's nothing better than them saying, we are welcome back our comedian, our friend, you know, like, on a Tonight Show, that you're a Tonight Show guy, like, I could go do the Tonight Show, like, I can, you know, I'd do it whatever I want. Like, it's kind of every 6 to 9 months or something is, like, usually the range. And, but if I had something that I'm like, I need to do it tomorrow, like, not tomorrow, but, like, you know, whatever, I have the outlet to go do that. So I love the Tonight Show, and I love the idea of doing it. I love being, and you got to be on a consistent, back then, but I mean, look, Steve Martin said in his book, it took him like 12 times or something. It was a lot longer. Some guys would be one. Stephen Wright, they asked him back like that week. Like that dude went to, you know, but this one, there was three channels. So nowadays,
it was so big that
it was everything. And I mean, it would change guys' lives overnight. But now being, I think, consistent on one is that's what is a good thing. You can always be, you're kind of associated with the Tonight, you know, is a good thing.
You were telling us you saw Letterman's Netflix series, the episode with Howard Stern. Three of us are big Howard Stern guys. Part of it, the interviewing, you know, and I grew up in the New York area, so I heard him on terrestrial radio, but kind of just the evolution over time and how he's maintained funniness as a young, edgy guy, and now as a guy who you know, talks about his therapy and all that. How interesting or unique is he to you? Because he's not a comedian, so to speak, in quotations, right? He's never done stand-up.
No. I think I appreciate, you know, I remember, like, you know, we weren't allowed to listen to him growing up, but he had a TV show and
the channel, right?
I remember seeing, like, but it wasn't until I like almost got serious and moved to New York, and then like was like ended up like listening when he went over there and started listening to him, and he's so funny. He's very, very funny, and he's a guy, and like as an interviewer, it's like you just listen to it. I like to like figure out what he's doing, like I like to listen to guys. I do it sometimes with comedy. Like, I can listen to comedy on the radio. Maybe a guy that I don't know. And I'll try to listen to it and figure out what's the thing that makes them, you know, what, I don't know, them, how they come up with a joke. Why is this joke not standing out? Why does some stuff stand out more than other? Stern, you like to watch it. You know, his thing, I think, is a lot of, you've said it all. What else can we talk about? He still has 30 more minutes to go. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I like to, like, that point, I think that's a tactic that he uses to make that person kind of go like, all right, I made it through it. And they're now guard gets down a little more. And then he's kind of back into it. And then
never thought of it that way. It makes a lot of sense, brilliant. Though.
But it also gives him the ability to come up with the next thing if he doesn't have it ready.
Yeah.
You know, towards the end of the interview, if he's still trying to figure out where to go next, he can say, look, Nate, you've said it all.
Because he follows up a lot of times. What's up with the deal with you and this person?
Too much. You said maybe you haven't, and he's about to make you say too much.
Yeah.
It's so long of a thing. He'll poke at you, he'll go at something and to say, you know, and everything him in his interview, he agrees with it. You could be like, I just killed my parents. He's like, yeah, I would love to do that too. Like, it's a way of agreeing with the person to like make them like not feel like you're like judging them, and then you're very open. Like, and I love the idea.
You're right. He would agree with
funny.
Anything.
It makes me wonder how much of that is plotted and how much of it is just the way he is. And I'm not naive, generally speaking, but I want to believe that's just the way he is. And
I
that's
think
how it
he
goes.
My, I have
and
a buddy
that he hasn't
like
mapped that.
That
out.
My buddy, the comic, Giannis Pappas, like, but he's very curious. He's from Brooklyn, he's a very curious guy. And like, so that's some curiosity. I think that's what's starting. Like, it's a curious, like, what? Like, you did, you know, and they really want to know. Like, you're not going to affect his, like, you're not going to change me, But like, I am very curious at how you think this stuff. And so like, when Stern does those interviews, it's unbelievable to hear him. Like, you know, he'll go at you hard, and if you're like, nah, I ain't talking about that, he backs off. And then, like, you know, and then he'll make you think. I listened to Larry David's, you know, or he had Seinfeld on. It's unbelievable with Seinfeld.
I'll never do another interview.
Yeah.
That was
it. There's no reason for it. He answered everything. But, like, Larry David did. And, like, you know, and Larry David think, he, like, I remember laughing. He's like, oh, I thought I made it out of this unscathed. Like, and everybody, you know, but he's good at, like, making you, like, go, I don't know. And I feel like with comics, if he did interviews a comic, you know, I mean, that could probably be the tough, because comics are very self-aware of, like, with comedy, you're very, like, I don't know, you're, it, and I think a lot of people think like this, but I, like, comedians can be very much like, I already think I know what you think. And so, like, in the, you know, so it's like, if you're doing an interview with that kind of level, you either got to let it go, or are you going to have some kind of resistance?
The battle.
Yeah, there's a bad, like, you know, but his interviews with Stern, I mean, with Chris Rock and Spade, or there's some of the best, you know.
It seems that comedians really like and appreciate him when they come on the show.
Yeah, man.
Like, you can feel that mutual
respect.
There's old
Artie Lang. I know Artie.
Artie Lang's fantastic.
So, like, I know Artie, and Artie is.
Do you watch Crashing?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how I started Crashing. Exactly that. I handed flyers at that comedy club with Pete Holmes. This is one of the shows about.
That's what I'm asking about in the next segment now that I know that.
But like with Artie, like he, you know, he's, I mean, Artie's the funniest person. Like him, like telling stories and doing these impressions. He does like all these New York sports radio guys. Like he'll do like impression, and it's like the greatest thing ever. And his memory. Princessa. His memory is unreal. This guy remembers every story, and we just sit there talking to him. He's the sweetest guy in the world. And, I mean, look, his rise, he was just a stern listener. He loved him.
He recited The Godfather to Scorsese, right?
Yeah, yeah.
On
it's
air.
Unbelievable.
Acting all the parts. When you're listening to him riff on stuff, not in an interview, or even in an interview, can you tell, you know, you said you know Artie. Could you tell when Artie Lang was typing a joke? Can you tell when he's taking something from Benji or somebody else? Do you have suspicions like, ooh, that came from one of the guys who's feeding him notes as this goes out? Or is he pretty seamless at making it all seem like it's him?
I think he's seamless. I had a buddy that did it.
What's it like?
It's like, I mean, he said he would go in. I don't think you have really any, you're not like in the, he wasn't like Benji like or something where it's that close to Stern.
Well, Benji's not that close anymore. He got kicked out for being late.
But they, I know like Artie, like they would give it, I think Artie would just say the joke.
Well, Artie had an open mic.
But Artie would always do good. He would back off the comics. If there's another, if you ever listen, unless he was really good friends with the comic, but like if there was another comic on, Artie would not talk. He would sit and let the comic shine. And then he would just talk during the other one. But I think with Stern, you know, I specifically think of that because then sometimes I'm like, all right, like is this, but in my head, I'm like, well, then either Benji has to be the funniest human being ever or it's Stern. And I don't think it's Benji. I think Stern is like, and he's so quick with the response. Like there's no way you're that quickly typing a joke and then it's transferring into your, you know, like you're saying it.
To the stream
like,
of the conversation.
It's, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, if we make a joke now, like, I'm not, you have to make fun of me and, like, you have to type it, send it over, and he's got to read it and then get it. It's just too fast. So I think a lot of it is, I think Stern is that funny of a person. I mean, when you're doing something as comfortable as he's doing stand up, talking in front of people, like, he's talked for, you know, I mean, you guys have talked for hundreds and hundreds of hours. So you're going to be able to be yourself more. Just because you're more comfortable with it. And so I think Stern, I bet he's, a lot of the jokes are his.
I love Crashing on HBO. Now, you said this was sort of your reality, what that show
depicts. It was exactly that. He got me, Pete Holmes got, we started in Chicago. I moved to New York. Pete moved six months, something before me. I followed Pete. It was a Boston comedy club. Pete was barking, which is handing out flyers, trying to get people to come to the show. And then Pete got me to do that job too. And so then we both were at Boston Comedy Club. And then we all went through, you know, Pete never, I mean, the show, I like, the show's great. I didn't even stay at these people's houses, but like Pete would be friends with a lot of these people. And then Pete kind of moved up and did like Best Week Ever was a thing on VH1. And then he got kind of started going like upward. And is that out
Pete,
of Boston,
like the background and everything, or is it exaggerated?
Yeah, yeah, no, it was great. Yeah, his wife cheated on him. Like they got divorced. You know, like it's yeah, it's kind of how Pete. That it's pretty accurate of how you know. Well, he came up and all that. I mean, when I met him. He was in Chicago. He was married, like you know, at the very beginning, and then it wasn't as quick. Like I don't. Obviously for TV they make. Everything's kind of sped up, but yeah, it's what happened.
And for those that don't know, the barking aspect of it, you hand out these flyers. Is there like your name or something written on the back where the owner of the club or the manager of the club knows like who you sent through the door kind of thing?
You know, maybe like I kind of go have our the way we did it was you would get up at the end of the night, so you would bark, so it wasn't like we would all get on stage at the very end of the
guaranteed.
Night. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so. You're, but then other guys would, but I would, but you'd have to bark. You'd have to get there at like 6 o'clock and kind of stand out there. The show would start at 8. It's a very loose show. The show would go from like 8 to sometimes 2 in the morning. It would just be a running show kind of throughout, and people would come in, they would leave. It wasn't like the weekends would be proper shows, but this would be a show that everybody would just stop in. I mean, Chappelle was stopping in all the time. I would watch Chappelle go up in front of 4 people. Like he would come from the Chappelle show, go there. We'd have 4 people in the audience. And then he would go up, and then we would just tell people he's on stage. And then they would, I remember one time I told someone, I was like, Chappelle's on stage. And they're like, we don't believe you. And I was like, why would I make this up? And she was like, I think you're just trying to make me go in there. I go, it is a comedy club. He is a comedian. Why would I go look, there's a window in the door. It's 4 steps. Go up there. If he's not there, turn around and leave. And they were like, I don't believe you. And they left. And I think about those people all the time because they just watched about. Oh, what, go look in the window. You'd have seen them. I mean, it wasn't wow. like yeah. I'm at a pizza wow. place. Yeah. Like, you know, it's a very
but in
obvious
the show.
Thing.
Pete lies about somebody being in there.
Well, you would. So we guys would do that. We never did it. Barking got. We did it in a way like I thought we you know in a real way that you're supposed to do it. We were getting people and you'd watch guys Burr, this comic Patrice O'Neill, he was passed away like
yeah,
but you'd see all these guys Louis like everybody would come in there and these were some guys were big some guys like Ricky Gervais came in there one time and just sat in the back and left. No one knew him. I knew, like me and like another comic knew who he was. This was before he was office here or anything here, but I remember him just kind of popping in. But they, yeah, but like some of them lied. Like, I mean, they would come. Other clubs would do it, and the ones in Times Square, those guys are, it's not even sort of. I've seen my name on one of theirs now, or being like, we have a thing at Comedy Central. They're doing a Comedy Central taping, or they would do Dane Cook. Someone came once to New York Comedy Club, and they were like, we were told Dane Cook was going to be here. We're like, Dane Cook plays the garden. Like, but. To be fair, those guys do go there. Like, you know, it's not that
he
crazy.
He was there. He just wasn't there that night.
He's just, he's doing, this was Dane Cook was the biggest he could be. Like, and they're like, he's supposed to show up. We're like, and you could always kind of be like, I mean, look, maybe he does. I don't know. But, I mean, it got kind of out of control where they were lying about it.
Do you have any aspirations to write a screenplay? Or do anything like that, or is it just stand-up comedy for you?
We're doing. I've written TV shows. I've sold TV shows, and so we're kind of plugging along with that and keep doing it. And it's a long process. I did 2 with Fallon producing them. So you sell them and you write them, and I haven't shot a pilot, but you know it's still like that. I do want to do a TV show and
sitcom
and
get in that kind of world.
Yeah, like a sitcom. So I'm still giving it a go and. Diving in that world and you just keep your stand-up going. That's the only thing you can kind of control, you know. So
Nate, you've said it all.
Said it all.
You've said too much.
Said too much.
This has been awesome. Great.
Watch how many times he does it.
The other one is
joke with each other.
Yeah. I mean, if we really wanted to do the Stern interview, we'd ask you if you've been to therapy. I mean, that's the other go-to for him.
Oh yeah, like that. Yeah, I haven't.
Loves talking
have
about
you fallen in love with your co-star?
Well, yeah, I know.
I mean, you it's mesmerizing. The person's like married. There's no way you haven't fallen in love with your coach.
The person has like a family and kids. Yeah. Like, you guys, you cheat on your wife quite a bit. Like, just like expecting that guy.
That's it, like, I'm clean.
Yeah, I do, man, all the time.
And you said it all.
You said it all.
Said it all. Nate, thank you for doing this, man. This has been a blast for us.
Thank you. I loved it.
And we will be there in October at Zane's for your show. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in October is when you can catch Nate Bargatze at Zany's, and we'll keep you updated whenever he's back in town as well. Nate Bargatze has been our guest.